Welcome to the Michael U Podcast. We have a very special guest today, Dan Wirtle. Dan, thank you for coming.
Michael, thank you so much for having me.
I'm really excited to have Dan on our pod. Dan is a realtor from our open office. So, Dan, I would just love to hear a little bit of your story to get started.
Okay. How far back do you want to go?
Start with, I was born here.
Well, like a lot of Vancouverites, I was born a little further out east in Ontario, in a small little town called Perth, and I grew up in Niagara-on-the-Lake, which is wine country.
Okay.
Lived there until I was 12 years old, at which point the family made a trip to Vancouver to visit my aunt on my mom's side, and as the whole family were skiers at the time, we took a day trip to Whistler, and pretty much fell in love with Whistler instantly.
Okay.
There was a booming construction phase there. My father was in construction, so he could get a job instantly. And again, as skiers, we really, really were attracted to it.
Right.
So, went back home to Ontario, had a family meeting at 12 years old. I put in my vote.
Yeah.
And, you know, a few months later, we were literally driving across Canada to move to Whistler. That was in 1987.
Wow. Dating yourself here.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Definitely. I'm afraid. Whistler, growing up there, obviously really interesting childhood. Spent my life in the mountains, really. You know, the first day I was there, I converted from skier to snowboarder. Finished elementary school, finished high school, and after high school, was so in love with snowboarding that that was the passion, and took a couple of years to basically compete and try to go pro.
Oh, wow. Okay.
This was a very different time. When I say go pro, you know, people were barely even getting inverted at that time. So
yeah,
it's a pretty kind of safe sport. But yeah, it was really fun, and met a lot of great people on the circuit, you know, competing around BC.
Yeah, that's pretty, you know, it's really interesting growing up in Whistler because it's pretty transient there, right? There's a lot of like ins and outs of different kids and stuff. Did you find that growing up in school?
Sort of, yeah. And it's weird when you're young and you live in a small town, you kind of get possessive, you know, and you didn't like the weekend warriors, I guess, as we call them,
coming in
and invading
right.
your little town. But then also, you know, it's got a bit of a hippie vibe, and people were quite mellow and laid back and open-minded, too.
Yeah.
You know, so... Because
it's really a resort town, right? So it's kind of...
Oh, definitely.
Yeah.
It's small. It was a different way of growing up, for sure.
Yeah.
There's no doubt about it. And again, being a small town, by the time I hit 21 years old, you know, there was a bunch of much younger people getting into snowboarding, and
yeah,
they were much more flexible and daring, and I couldn't keep up at all.
Okay.
And at the same time, you know, thanks to snowboarding and touring, I met all these fantastic people from Vancouver.
Okay.
And I was very interested in what they were doing, especially musically, you know.
Right.
Whistler was kind of close-minded musically for whatever reasons, and Vancouver was much more open.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, at the age of 21, I decided to leave Whistler to go to Vancouver and explore music.
Wow, that's a shift. So from snowboarding to music.
True
yeah.
story, yes. Yeah.
yeah. So tell us about your music background.
Yeah, and then so I had a best friend at the time, and he had just started a band. And I really liked the direction they were going in.
Right.
And so I bought a guitar and taught myself how to play guitar.
Oh, really? So you're in the band?
I was in the band.
Okay.
Yeah, yeah. And we started recording, you know, our own tunes, you know, and this is pretty much pre-digital. So we, you know, rented an 8-track and,
oh, wow.
and started recording. And
what was the band called?
Circle Square.
Circle Square.
Mm-hmm.
We were, gotta check that out.
We were so committed to it that, you know, after putting out an EP or two ourselves, we decided to move to London, England and try to get signed by a record label.
Oh, wow.
So gave up the property, sold all my furniture and just moved to London. And
yeah,
you know, four of us lived in one bedroom for a couple months. And
wow.
Yeah. Yeah. We were very committed to it. And quite an experience.
Yeah.
You know, so. Actually,
how did that turn out?
It was a success.
Oh, really?
Okay, yeah,
okay.
Yeah,
okay.
Yeah.
I want to hear about this.
At the very
yeah.
tail end of it,
right?
Literally, like a week before we were set to fly home, and probably the 40th label we had visited.
Yeah.
This one label and this one manager really liked us, and basically picked us up for a couple albums.
Oh wow! So like, what kind of music was it? What were you guys playing?
Gosh, well, we're talking, you know, early
mid
90s. So. definitely shoegazer was the term.
Okay.
You know, the genre. It was, for those who know
yeah.
it, it was somewhere between, let's call it Slow Dive or My Bloody Valentine mixed with Tricky or sort of trip-hop style.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
Yeah.
That is very interesting. You know, it's funny, like, because we meet a lot of realtors, and now obviously Dan's a realtor. So, but tell me a little bit. So you were performing, and then but you did something else in music as well.
Oh, definitely. Yeah. So the band was amazing. We put out an EP and did a couple local shows. And at this time, or I guess I should also mention that we didn't have a drummer. We had a DJ who was, you know, providing the beats for us. And he was also, you know, like a nightclub, like a house music DJ. And I was, you know, kind of very interested in that style and in that aspect and where that was going. And in Vancouver, you know, early 2000s or late 90s, is sort of when the rave scene started. And really when house music sort of infiltrated, you know, the scene here.
Yeah.
And I just found it quite fascinating. And so that kind of drew me away from the band, left that to pursue electronic music and become a DJ and produce that style.
Wow.
Yeah, so did that for the next 15 years.
You did that for 15 years. So you were you a DJ then?
Yeah.
Dan? Yeah. Mm-hmm. What was your, did you have a DJ handle?
Timeline.
DJ Timeline. Okay, we can look up Dan. DJ Timeline.
Yeah, I used to do some stuff around town.
That's great. Is it all around in Vancouver? Did you travel for that as well?
I was fortunate enough to travel a little bit.
Okay.
You know, I was flown to Bali for a few shows.
Oh, wow.
I played in Ibiza once, but, you know, there's nothing compared to these big guys and what they do, but I definitely was pretty lucky and fortunate within that world.
That's, you know, that's such a, because obviously it's pure creativity, pure, like, being almost like a pure artist, and, you know, what you do now, which is, like, so substantially different, right?
Yeah. Somewhat. I mean, it evolved. I mean, that wasn't necessarily paying the bills.
Okay.
So, to be honest, at the same time, I was also in web design.
Right.
You know, so I was building websites, and again, we're talking late 90s.
Yeah.
You know, somewhat early to that game, and got hired by a few firms to build their sites.
Mm-hmm.
And then that kind of evolved into a local event promotions company. I was DJing for this group called Blueprint Events all the time.
Right.
And it was just a solo entrepreneur at the time. And I was then helping him design flyers and posters and this kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
And we really clicked. So at one point he offered me basically a job, said, look, I'm doing this solo. It's getting bigger. Dance music's getting bigger in Vancouver. You know, would you like to kind of partner up here and just build this thing together?
Yeah.
And it was a really great opportunity. So I said absolutely yes.
So there was this was an events company.
Correct. Yeah. Blueprint. They're still definitely around Vancouver and the biggest by far. It's,
oh, really?
Oh, yeah. It's they dominate Western Canada.
So obviously from, you know, going into this music route or from sport, like from athletics to music. And then you've, you know, so Dan, you've been a realtor for how long now?
2.5 years.
2.5 years, yeah. So right off the, so you finished at Blueprint. How did that go?
Yeah, so I was with Blueprint for 9 years.
Right.
Literally started as the number two guy. And when I left, you know, there was over 400 people.
Wow.
So watching that grow, and it wasn't like there was 400 hires. There was a consolidation of two companies, and one, of course, absolved all these employees in a positive way. So, but to kind of be with the company for 9 years and watch it grow from literally 1 to 400 was really quite fascinating. And my role there, you know, basically starting almost as a graphic designer, by year 9, my title was director of concerts, where I was in essence responsible for the logistical and financial management for the 300 to 400 events annually that are happening in Western Canada.
Right. Wow.
Yeah, there was a lot. We did a lot.
That's crazy.
And I'm talking, you know, up to 40,000 person events.
Holy.
So after being in music now for, this was, 2017, I had been in music for 20 years.
Right.
I had been with Blueprint for 9. And, you know, I was kind of hitting an age where as much as I love music, I had hit my personal ceiling of what I could do.
Okay.
And achieve. And also, you know, there's a lot of other things I want to experience in life.
Yeah.
And so, you know, real estate was definitely calling my name.
Yeah, why real estate? It's like such a transition.
Yeah,
right?
No, for sure.
Yeah.
And a good question. So, looking back now, it's funny. When I first moved to Vancouver and had to rent a couple places,
yeah,
I found it absolutely fascinating and so fun to look at as many properties as possible before I picked the right one.
Right.
You know, there's just so many incredible floor plans, some incredible buildings, areas, neighborhoods, lighting, everything. And I didn't recognize it at the time, but I really had sort of a natural affinity to it. So, you know, I rented a few places and that was great. But it didn't really start to strike me as far as a career until a few years later when I had a personal residence and a mortgage broker colleague of mine refinanced my home and said, hey, you've got a line of credit. You know, your place is appreciated a lot.
Right.
So you've got access to this capital. And I was like, oh, okay, well, this is interesting.
Yeah.
You know, it was kind of a first time and a first realization for me. And so I'm like, well, I need to invest this. I got to make my money, make some money. And I then decided to talk to all my wealthy and successful friends and say,
okay,
hey, what would you do? What would you do? And it always came back to real estate.
Right.
And so I'm like, okay, so real estate's, you know, where you can make your money, make more money. So how do I do that? What's next? So then I basically just started reading as many magazines and books as possible.
Right.
I went to a Rich Dad Poor Dad seminar.
Okay.
Came through town and
yeah,
went to that, and that was cool.
Like
and
on the radio or something like
exactly,
that.
Exactly. Like 100% right. Yeah. And then that turned into their 3-day upsell, which I really liked. And then at the end of that, they said, great, now you can come for a month for $40,000 or whatever it was.
Yeah.
And I said, that doesn't feel right.
Right.
So I kept searching. And at that point, I came across a book by Don R. Campbell, who is a gentleman who created the Real Estate Investment Network.
Right.
So a national group of investors. It's, gosh, about 23 years old, this group.
Wow.
And, you know, just completely information-based, incredible group of people. No pitchy salesness, just data and how and where to invest based on economic data.
Right.
Really smart stuff. And that felt right.
Yeah.
So I joined that 8 years ago and learned as much as I could. You know, it's literally like trying to drink out of a fire hose when you first start because there's so much information
that Rain puts out. Yeah.
Yeah. And then about 6 months later, bought my first property and investment property rather. And then, of course, that turned into a second, and then that turned into a third.
Right.
And
wow.
At this point, you know, I was really kind of getting that bug. I was then doing what we call joint ventures, you know, helping friends and family buy properties.
Right.
Which was great as well. So while the music industry and everything at Blueprint was amazing, real estate was kind of bubbling under the surface.
Right.
You know, and then personally kind of hit a tipping point where, you know, I was at the end of what I'll call my music career, and I just was being pulled so hard into real estate, you know, that I had to make that leap.
Yeah. And so then you got licensed?
Yep. And then I got licensed, and I had read every book about real estate possible.
Yeah.
You know, I really kind of,
right,
you know, to make a crazy life change, you know, at a later age, that I wanted to hit that ground running.
Yeah.
You know, I didn't want to get licensed and then figure it out.
Right.
I wanted to figure it out and then get licensed.
Yeah.
You know, so I had definitely interviewed all my mortgage broker friends, all my realtor friends, read every book I could so that, when I got licensed, there was already basically clients in the hopper.
Yeah, it was kind of interesting because Dan was one of the most prepared people for our, like, so Dan is obviously an agent at Oakland, and he was one of the most prepared people for an interview, that we've actually probably ever sat down with. You had all the information of all the different brokerages and competitive advantages and everything like that. So what was that process for you, actually? Because you're like really analytical. Yeah,
and that's crazy feedback. Thank you for letting me know that. So interesting. Yeah, of course, you know, in reading books and talking to my agent colleagues, they definitely said, you know, you want to interview with at least 4 or 5 brokerages.
Right.
So I think I made it 8. And yeah, I am analytical. And again, it's, to me, it was such an important decision. And it was fundamental, I think, to success of starting out of the gate correctly. That, yeah, I sat with the 6, 7, 8 brokerages. And definitely being a very data and analysis driven type of human.
Right.
I definitely looked at every brokerage's deal structure, you know, being part of the important information to make the decision on.
Right.
And, you know, broke it all down to, you know, if I made $50,000, what do I net home or take home, all the way up to $500,000? And what's my net take home? And basically Oakland won in every single stage.
Mm.
You know, yes, there are 1 or 2 brokerages locally, I think, that are even a little bit, let's call it, less expensive, but they didn't have the culture, they didn't have the vibe, they didn't have the people, they didn't have the branding. So
right,
for me, Oakland was a far and away number one choice.
Oh, that's great. So you did kind of that, you know, you analyze the features, benefits, and you kind of like put it in, and yeah, that's great. He's not being paid for this, by the way. I'm going to slip a 20 in your pocket later, Dan. But you mentioned a few real estate books that And I think a lot of our listeners like love reading about real estate, love reading about business. What were some of the books that were the most impactful to you, especially when you just getting started out?
Yeah, definitely. I think there's one called Your First Year in Real Estate by Dirk Zeller. That one I found really inspirational and informative,
Yeah.
of course. You know, that one was definitely good. I think we've all heard of The Millionaire Real Estate Agent,
right?
Gary Keller, I believe. It's, you know, it's kind of a staple or a Bible, but it
yeah.
still stands up. You know, there's still principles in there that are quite important.
Right.
Not directly real estate related, but sort of like time management related is The One Thing. You know,
oh, yeah.
Gary Keller
yeah,
book,
Gary Keller
but,
book. Yeah, it's good.
You know, for any aspect in life or for any kind of entrepreneur, your time management is so important. So I found that one.
It's a resource.
Really
right?
a benefit.
Yeah. For sure. So, like, tell us, walk us through the journey of your first year, Dan.
Okay. So first year. Interesting. So of all the books that I had read, when it was coming to goal setting, and also talking to some local agents, it all came back to me that, you know, if you hit 12 deals in your first year, that's a good number. It's a respectable number. So it's like, great, I want 15. So that was,
right.
that was my number.
Yeah.
And I was... also very fortunate to, like I said, I kind of had told most people that I was going to be an agent
right.
a couple months before I really was.
Yeah.
My girlfriend was a licensed agent, and she had a listing, and she was very generous in saying, look, if this doesn't sell by the time that you get licensed, we will co-list it together.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. So, luckily enough, I got licensed, and you know, 2 days later, I had my first listing. Well, a co-listing. And I'll tell you something, it's so beneficial to... go through your first listing as a co-list,
okay.
in my opinion, because there is so much you don't know when you start out as far
yeah.
as the actual, you know, ins and outs of a transaction. And, you know, this was 2017. So, as you know, we had 150 people through in the first weekend, and
right.
And it sold on day 9 or something like
yeah.
that. Very, very crazy to walk into what is likely the craziest market that Vancouver has ever seen.
Yeah.
You know, as far as prices, bidding
sure.
wars.
Yeah, absolutely.
That type of thing. So, yeah, stepped into one of the most insane markets ever. Like I said, very lucky to have had a girlfriend who co-listed with me. After that, you know, the marketing for myself kicked in.
Yeah. You
time.
Were really particular with your marketing, actually, right?
That's one of the biggest things I'll definitely thank Blueprint for.
Right.
You know, they are so smart in their marketing. And, you know, when you have 300-400 events per year to announce, it's very important that everyone gets noticed.
Yeah.
You know, so I really kind of took that mindset and said, look, every listing I have, it's going to be well noticed. You know, I'm gonna,
yeah.
I am not afraid to spend the money. I'm not afraid to get my name out there.
Right.
I'm not afraid to try to over-deliver for every client and
yeah.
make their house as valuable as possible. So that was definitely, I think, a part of the success. But yeah, you know, first year, it's interesting because it's a roller coaster, you know, especially in a wild market. You have to learn and be able to educate your clients on how to buy a house subject free.
Right.
You know, here, come make $1 million decision and make it within a couple hours
yeah.
with no subjects.
That's
you
right.
know? It was wild to kind of have to learn that and learn that quickly.
Right.
So fairly consistent out of the gate and then had like maybe a 3 month lull. Which was, you know, painful because you feel like your life is ending.
Right.
The expenses don't ever stop, but suddenly
yeah.
the income does. And then,
what do you think caused that lull?
Well, that's a good one. I haven't thought about that.
I've analyzed a lot of people's businesses, and you know, I think that what ends up happening with a lot of people, especially a lot of agents that get started in the business or have even been in the business for a long time, they do a lot of business development, let's say at the beginning of the year, they do tons of prospecting and marketing, and then they obtain all these clients. And as they obtain all these clients, they have like, their pipeline is looking like, oh, okay, I have like 7, 8, 9, 10 for sure buyers or sellers that are here. And so they focus all their attention on harvesting the, you know, fruits of their labor, and they forget to plant seeds while they're kind of in this process of like cultivating the leads that they've planted. So, you know, I'm a huge proponent of, and I know Dan is really big on this too, about like a consistent approach to prospecting and marketing and so on and so forth. But yeah, keep going, Dan, about
yeah,
your first year.
I think, I mean, it was definitely reiterated in a lot of books that, you know, you never stop prospecting. And most importantly, when it's good.
Yeah.
Like you said, you know what I mean? It feels like things are moving along. There's lots of deals in the pipeline. That's when you push even harder because the second you pull back, like you said, those seeds need to be planted now or else they're not going to be, you know, growing in three,
right.
six, 12 months.
Yeah.
And so the lull, I don't know. I don't have an answer. I wish I did.
Yeah.
I almost should because it would maybe be help the business. I think
That's
it was just, you know, like I said, we're only at month six now or so.
Mm-hmm.
And I think being somewhat so early on as an agent, it was still just cultivating what I had planned
yeah,
for the previous
exactly.
6 months. You know, because I think once that lull finished or completed, then it's been very consistent since.
Yeah, yeah. So how was your first year? How many transactions did you do, Dan?
I got licensed in the first week of April. So if we'll look at it sort of like April till the end of 2017,
right.
so 9 months instead of 12, I hit 14 deals.
Oh, that's very respectful. That's good.
It was okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I sold 10 million in that first year.
Wow. Okay.
Which it's funny, you know, like I mentioned that 12 number earlier.
Yeah.
You know, and that to me was the only reference I had. So,
right.
you know, thinking 15 was thinking big and that
yeah.
was exciting. And then you get into it and then you hear about the Michael Hughes of the world.
No.
Like this guy did 50 in his first year. And then you hear about the Jason Samard. So, like
right.
this guy did 116 or whatever
right.
it was. Like just astronomical numbers.
Yeah.
And kind of reframes your mind into what's possible, which I enjoyed, you know?
Yeah.
It's interesting how much, you know, you almost limit yourself if you're not thinking big enough.
Oh, totally, 100%, yeah. So that's great. So you obviously, you're a solo agent working on your own in the first year, like everyday prospecting and doing all your marketing. And Dan, if you guys haven't seen Dan's website or his marketing material, it's really, really sharp. It's very, very informative. It's really analytical as well. His blog is really informative too. So yeah, it's great resource for people to kind of, I'm a big believer in modeling. I don't know. Are you a big believer in modeling? Like looking at what other people are doing kind of?
Oh,
yeah.
1,000,000%.
Oh, yeah.
For sure. I thrive on trying to improve in some way every single day.
Mm-hmm.
I think there was, it was a David Bowie autobiography I read.
Okay.
And it was a great line that he made. And it was something along the lines of, you know, every person he meets, he approaches it as if he's got something to learn.
Mm-hmm.
And he almost sees himself as like a car with like, you know, a thousand parts. And as soon as he finds someone who has a better part than him, he almost adapts that.
Ah, that's
cool. You know,
because
there's
yeah.
always something, I think, that you can learn from everyone you ever meet.
Yeah.
You know, and yeah, for sure. There's always someone doing it better, I feel. So I just try to figure out what that is and try to improve literally every day.
Yeah, there's this Japanese term. It's called Kaizen. Have you
yes,
heard of it before?
Absolutely.
Yeah, so Kaizen. Yeah, so the pursuit of, it's the pursuit of perfection, the pursuit of self-improvement. So, like, it was a big term in this documentary called Jiro Dreams of Sushi.
Okay.
Did you watch that?
No.
I've
not
heard
of that.
Oh, my gosh. Like, I think everyone should watch this documentary. It's about this sushi chef who's like a Michelin 3-star chef, and he works at this small sushi shop and his whole idea is like just the perfect piece of sushi.
Okay.
He's done
oh, wow.
it, he's repeated it over and over again. He's trying to make it perfect. And
yeah.
it's this idea of like pursuit, you know, the journey of self-improvement, the journey of the self-improvement is you find yourself in that whole in that process.
Right.
Kind of, so it's really interesting. So like, you know, that's a kind of a principle that defines a lot of like Toyota uses that principle.
Yeah, yeah.
A lot of companies use that principle. It's kind of cool. It was very like big in the 80s and 90s when Japanese culture was everywhere.
For sure.
Yeah.
I think it's a very, very smart approach. You know, the world evolves so fast now,
right.
faster than ever. And I think it's so easy to get left behind if you are not paying attention to technology trends.
Yeah.
And yeah,
so maybe I can ask Dan, so, you know, you obviously took a big transition from athletics to music and then to real estate. When you were reaching out to all your network, you know, your friends and family, and they're like, oh, so Dan's in real estate now. Like, how did you package that? How did you deliver that message so that it came off as being genuine and it came off as being, you know, not like a kind of a faddy thing to do?
Yeah, yeah,
especially in the hot market, everyone was kind of jumping in. So
yeah, no, for
yeah.
sure, for sure. I think I remember when I posted to Facebook saying the big sort of thank you for 9 years blueprint.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I didn't mention what I was doing next, but I mentioned that, you know, I had decided to transition
okay.
out of that industry. And one person said just out of the blue, you should get into real estate. And okay. It really kind of took me because yeah. I hadn't told, you know, anyone at
right.
that time. And I was like, why? You know, I'm like, oh, it's your personality. It's your personality.
Yeah.
And without knowing it, but with knowing a lot of people, and you know, when you're in an industry for 20 years, you make a lot of friends.
Right.
And you have a lot of colleagues and you have a lot
yeah.
of connections.
Mm-hmm.
And it was even a surprise to myself in when I mentioned it to people, when it finally came public, how many people were, well, of course, not even supportive, but just like, oh, that makes so much sense.
Mm-hmm.
You know, because I think it's just the way that I've interacted with people.
Right.
I think it's, you know, I'm not trying to talk myself up here, but I think I've got a work ethic, a level of honesty and a level of empathy and compassion that really linked with this industry.
Yeah.
You know, so I think when it was told to people, they were like, yeah, this makes complete sense. And,
that's awesome.
Here, call this guy because he needs to buy a house.
Yeah. You know, that's great. You know, I think a lot of people, when they first get started in a business, are actually scared to tell their, because they're like, you know, they're scared to tell people about it because, you know, they're like, oh, I'm really a beginner. Like, let me try to get my feet wet a little bit first and try to, like, you know, dip their toe in it. You just, like, dove in head first, right? You, like, ended the previous job. You just dove right in. And I think that's probably, you know, pretty wise because you make that clear cut and then you announce it and then, and it was embraced by the people, especially coming from such a different industry.
Yeah, I'll definitely say, you know, my boss at the time at Blueprint, I was pretty much terrified to tell him I was leaving. You know, after 9 years and being an integral part of that business, I did not know how it was going to play out.
Yeah.
And I was scared. I felt like I was letting him down immensely.
Yeah.
And so I played out about 100 scenarios in my head how this would turn out.
Right.
And none of them were right. You know, I sat down and we had our face to face. And I told him, and the first thing out of his mouth was, I want to be your first deal.
Oh, wow.
I couldn't,
that supportive.
That support. I couldn't believe it. I was so thankful. And you know.
Well, that shows, you know, that shows how you know, well-respected you were as a, you know, in that field, you know, to have that kind of response. Because
yeah.
most people would be like, get out of my office. I want to see you again,
totally.
You traitor.
Right? Yeah. No, and that's, you know, one of the scenarios. But,
yeah.
No, it was very, very encouraging and heartwarming to get that response.
Well, that's great. So, like, yeah, fairly, you know, successful first year, really successful first year. Most, the average agent, and just for the people that don't know, the average agent in Vancouver, I think, does four or five, six
right.
transactions. Like, that's everyone, not just first year agents. But,
yeah.
So, you know, Dan started in a good way. If, you know, even though you started in a good way, if you were to make any changes from, you know, like looking back at your first year, if you were to make any like tweaks or changes, what would you have done?
I mean, you don't know what you don't know, in a sense. I, out of sheer ego, decided to do this solo, right?
Right.
I wanted to build my business and be a success by myself.
Mm-hmm.
I needed that, you know, after, I guess, working under someone or for someone for so long. This was part of what I personally wanted to achieve.
Yeah.
And I guess I'm saying that because the other route might be to, let's say, instantly join a team or become an assistant or, you know, join a sales force at a pre-sale, whatever it is.
Right.
Right. There's no wrong path here. This one was just for me. So I think I would have liked to have maybe joined or gotten a good mentor
okay.
out of the gate.
Yeah.
You know, someone who's very experienced and willing to help.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I think that's something that I still to this day miss.
Mm-hmm.
I also think I am quite hard on myself,
mm.
you know, so there's definitely parts where, especially in the lull, where I'm beating myself up as
Why
opposed to...
Why are you hard
to,
on yourself? Where does that come from? Get psychological.
Where does it come from? I
yeah.
don't know. I came from such a loving and supportive family, so
mm-hmm.
I'm not sure if that equates to it or not.
Mm-hmm.
I'm very independent,
mm-hmm.
so maybe that's, you know, being quote-unquote hard on myself is my self-motivator.
Okay.
You know, kind of you can always do better as opposed to looking for outside influence or support.
Yeah.
That could be it.
You know, I think when people accept responsibility and they know that they are in charge of their existence and stuff like that, it does create some sort of a pressure on yourself because you know that it's on your shoulders, right? And, you know, I always find it, I love self-reflection. I don't know if you do this, Dan. I think you mentioned that you so Dan was so kind. And so what we do in Oakland University, and Dan was in Oakland University. Were you with Ryan in Oakland?
Oh,
you were.
Yeah,
okay, okay.
Right.
So we're gonna get onto that later.
Yeah.
But so in our beginner Oakland University class, at the end of it, we do a panel, and Dan just did the panel for the last graduating class that we had for Oakland, and the response, like, I don't know if you got any texts, but I get a lot of messages from the new agents, and they were just like, oh my gosh, Dan was amazing.
Oh, wow.
I'm so happy that he was there, because he's a very analytical person. He's very direct. If you ask Dan, like, how do you get listings, he'll tell you exactly, like, this is it. So I think that was really refreshing and good. But I always find it really helpful to kind of do a bit of self-reflection. Some people journal, like, do you ever journal?
Every day.
Yeah, there you go. Yeah, you mentioned that. Yeah, you journal. So, yeah, you can kind of link it back and try to improve, right?
That's it.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, if we're going to talk books and first year and good ways to kind of come out strong and benefit,
right.
I was definitely turned on to a book called The Miracle Morning, which for me was literally a game changer.
Yeah.
You know, this is the book that teaches you how to essentially start your day to get you prepared, mind, body, and soul for the rest of the day.
Right.
And to, you know, break it down very quickly, my mornings, you know, begin at 5:30 every day. I immediately go and meditate for about 15 to 20 minutes. And then that turns into reading. I'll read for about the same amount of time. Then it is some journaling or writing, like you said. You know, a lot of this is what you're appreciative for, what you're thankful for,
right.
What you want to do that day. And then some visualization, you know, again, what you want today, what you want 5 years, what you want in 10. And then, of course, is the fitness aspect, you know, going to the gym, going for a run, whatever it is.
Yeah.
And the process takes about 90 minutes, let's call it, on average. But by the time I'm done, by the time I sit at my desk at 8 a.m., I am so primed to take on everything that the world throws at me, in a sense, you know, that there's nothing that kind of can defeat you. You know, real estate, that's a lot of no's in this industry. You know what I mean? There's a lot of, not negativity, but a lot of,
a lot of rejection.
A ton of rejection.
It
can get to you, you know, it really can. But if you really work on your mind and body in the morning, then you're just kind of like, we're in a force field all day.
Right,
you can handle it much better. It just bounces off you and okay, cool, on to the next.
Yeah, it's like there's interesting. It's kind of like a test of discipline. You know, I mean, on this, I don't know why, maybe it's because I'm Asian, but like, I mean, on this, like, discipline, like, this thing's just been kind of like creating an ecosystem in my mind, you know, about like the idea of not only having discipline, but training your discipline. So like to get up at 5:30 is like a very disciplined thing to do.
Yeah.
And to like go to the gym or journaling and meditating when you don't feel like freaking meditating and stuff like that, you know, but that habit of like, I do things like, I do like a cold shower every morning and I don't do it because I enjoy cold showers.
Yeah.
I do it because I'm like, okay, I read in this, I don't know if it was an article or something like that, that people that take cold showers are either like psychopaths or like, or like major triathlete, crazy, great success people. And so I'm like, I hope I'm one of those. I'm only a part psychopath, but like, because you're just training your, like, to be able to go through hard things and voluntarily go through hard things.
Got it.
You know, and because that's almost things that you do every morning. You like, your body doesn't want to wake up at 5:30 in many cases, but your mind just drives you to do it.
That's right.
You know, you're not going to want to call that client you haven't talked to in 3 years, but your mind is just going to drive you to do it, and it's going to be fantastic. And so, you know, I think there's elements of that I'm kind of playing with because, you know, I don't know if it's a counterpoint, but, you know, like accountability is on the other side as well. Like, you know, and do people need to be held accountable to get success or do they need a higher amount of discipline? And because it's kind of on both sides. Because accountability
Definitely.
Is an external thing. Discipline's an internal thing. So
yeah,
I'm trying to like balance the two because what happens when you lose the accountability, do you lose your discipline, like, do you lose the actions and activities?
Yeah.
So I'm kind of just kind of like playing with this idea right now. So just, I read a book because I was really big on accountability before. So I think maybe like getting externally, like getting coaches and so then I still have a coach, but getting a lot of external kind of accountability. And then I read this book by Miyamoto Musashi. It's called The Book of the Five Rings. It's about samurais.
Right.
And like samurais are like, really into like self-discipline. Martial arts is about like self-discipline,
right?
Like self-awareness. And so it's kind of like interesting to me. I was like, so I've been trying to like train myself to be more disciplined because I think I'm kind of undisciplined in a lot of ways. So
who's your accountability partner now?
Well, you know, I've always, you know, without saying it too, I've always hired coaches. Like, I think I'm a big proponent of education. You know, like my friends that are doctors that may or may not get paid as much or a little bit less or whatever it is we potentially do, they go through continuing education. They went through like crazy education, 7 years of medical school and all this stuff. And then us as like entrepreneurs, we're like, I don't know about you, but I graduated with a bachelor and I'm like, okay, like, and here I am. So,
right.
So I always thought perpetual self, professional development was very important. So, so I've almost always had a coach, like either a sales coach when I first got started or a life coach that I hired for a few years and, you know, from an external perspective or, and then obviously getting to work so closely with my sister, she was almost like a mentor to me. But you know, and I think you can find accountability in different things. So, you know, how about yourself?
Kind of, you know, I definitely hold myself accountable. I'm one of these people that I consider very self-driven. You know, I live at home alone and I am very able, I guess, to put in endless hours of quote unquote work.
Yeah.
You know, I don't get distracted. I'm just on all the time in a sense. So in that sense, I hold myself accountable. You know, I definitely know my numbers every year. I know my numbers every month, every week, and every day. I literally have my numbers broken down on a daily sheet.
So what do you mean when you say your numbers? Can you specify that a bit for us?
Yeah. I mean, in the most simplest form, it's how many clients or potential clients am I having considerable conversations with about buying or selling real estate?
Okay.
That's it. And for me to hit my goal this year, that number, daily number, is 10. You know, if I communicate, you know, phone call over email, text, whatever it is, but as long as you're having a conversation about real estate and kind of pushing that needle forward. So for me, it's 10. And it doesn't sound too big, which is great. It's very achievable. But some days it's really hard to talk to 10 people,
you know,
just people are away, people don't answer their phone,
right,
whatever the case may be. But yeah, I find it very effective for just the way that I operate, to have my numbers literally in front of me and then just work towards them every day.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So you know what a key performance indicator is, right,
Dan?
Yeah, so like that's something. So a key performance indicator from a business perspective is kind of like a key number that a business pays attention to. So for example, Netflix would be number of subscribers or number of views or time on Netflix. That would be their key performance indicators. And they're looking at that, at those analytics like consistently every single day. So for a real estate business, primarily it's your pipeline. So your clients that are going to buy a property within the next 1, 3, 6 months, and your sellers that would do that in the next 1, 3, and 6 months, and kind of making sure that that's a full engagement and current listings, current close, like closings upcoming and stuff like that. So these are numbers that real estate agents should really be paying attention to.
Yeah.
So it's really interesting because I can, whenever I do business analysis with agents and stuff like that, I kind of can sense, I kind of have a good idea of where their business is headed when I'm like, okay, let's look at the pipeline. Let's look at what's coming up. I'm like, ooh, these next few months are going to be rough.
Right.
Like, so I hope you save some money. Like, because it's not getting, this is the stretch where it's going to get tricky.
Mm-hmm.
Because you can kind of forecast those things.
Right.
You know? In many cases. So Dan obviously takes that into consideration deeply when he's working. Yeah,
definitely. It's absolutely business, right? And we have to treat it as such. You'll definitely notice or see, you know, when you work with or talk to any kind of high performer, these guys, they have it down. They're dialed. And what I mean by that is, you know, their systems and their numbers, and, you know, they can crank marketing or presentations up or down as needed. Not that it ever goes down, but, you know, they can crank it more, you know, up when they need to. And they can also, and something I think I've taught myself, is you can have, let's call it quieter times, but if you're hitting your numbers every day, every week, you know that you're planting those seeds, building real estate karma, and those deals will come. You know, and I guess that's believing in the process, believing in your system. Mm-hmm. You know, and again, I consider myself still a bit of a baby in this industry, but what I have learned over the 2.5 years is to definitely believe in your process. And if you are hitting your daily numbers, the results will absolutely come.
Yeah. So how was year two for you, Dan?
Year two. Okay. Yeah. So came off of year one with 14 deals. 2018 then, so we'll go now the full year.
Yeah.
21.
21 deals. Wow.
Yeah.
Fantastic.
That was 13 million in sales,
mm-hmm.
and a 200K gross commission.
Wow. You're admitting your earnings, so
I like
good.
To be transparent.
Yeah.
And I'll tell you something. I always appreciate when other agents are about stuff.
Yeah.
You know, it helps you understand and build your own business,
right,
when you have true, I don't know, I guess, numbers and analysis to
yeah.
compare to.
And I think that's awesome, and there's nothing to be ashamed. Like, you know, there's only things to be proud of or not so proud of when this is the truth, right?
Yeah.
And so obviously Dan has, since his first year in the business, has won awards from our office, you know, Oakwin Sales Achievement Awards and stuff like that. But I just saw it. I was looking at the stats for this year. And you're on track to do Medallion this year. You were on track to do Medallion this year.
This will be my
yeah.
first year Medallion.
Yeah.
Which is amazing. Obviously,
right.
very excited about that.
Yeah, Medallion is top 10% in Greater Vancouver.
Yes, and the board has recently unveiled their, I guess, standings, if you
yeah.
call it.
Right.
And they'd like to say it's not marketing or don't use it or
yeah.
what kind of reference. Not quite sure
yeah.
what that means.
Right.
But should I share that number?
Sure, you can. This is just current right now, so it's not, the year isn't closed yet. So the year
right.
will end on December 31st. So there's still six weeks remaining in the year to kind of. Target to push for Medallion or top 10% or top 1%.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. So it's when it came out just a couple of weeks ago, and luckily I had four deals in the pipeline and those closed. I got up to number 128.
Wow, 120. That's amazing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I couldn't believe it either. I mean, it's within striking distance
yeah.
of the president's.
Yeah.
Not going to happen for me this year, but it was pretty incredible
yes.
to see that.
Yeah. So that is fantastic. So there are over 14,000 realtors in Greater Vancouver, and this is like volume of transactions. So the board only kind of puts out the volume of transactions, not the gross commissions earned or anything like that. So it could be wildly different. If someone sold a $500 million Bentall building and they did one sale, they're probably going to earn more than any other residential agent or whatever.
Right. Oh, yeah, sure.
Yeah, probably. But it depends on the commission structure and everything. But, you know, for Dan in this case, he's placed 128th out of 14,000 realtors in our board, which is pretty spectacular for being just in the third year of the business.
Yeah, I'm happy with it. You know,
yeah.
127 to go, but
yeah.
I'll take it as a win this year.
So how many transactions have you done so far this year, Dan?
Okay, so 2019, I'm at 34.
34, fantastic.
Which is 26 million in sales,
mm-hmm.
or about 370 GCI.
Wow, that's just, you know, it's just pretty amazing to see, you know, the kind of the growth. And so, obviously, you know, where would you say you get most of your business from right now? Is it from,
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's interesting. This year I will get about 30% of my business from online leads.
Right.
Last year it was more. Last year it was 40%. This year it's 30. And I'm very heavy in the Facebook ad world. I get, 2,500 to 3,000 leads this year from Facebook ads.
Wow.
And those convert, like I said, I'm getting about 30% of my business from there. This year, my referral numbers are what's surprising. I'm getting about 50% of my business this year is referral.
Wow.
And, you know, this isn't necessarily referrals from people I've transacted with. Yeah, of course there's some, but honestly, it's mostly referrals from people I've known from the last 20 years,
mm-hmm.
just people, you know, again, music industry, colleagues,
yeah.
friends, you know, so a lot of it is from there. There's a couple repeats in there. You
mm-hmm.
know, I'm very investor focused with my transactions. So
right.
there's a few investors who, you know, we've transacted 3-4 times a year
right.
sometimes, you know, so there's repeats there as well.
Mm-hmm.
And then I think I had two from open houses this year as well.
Wow. That's great. So, obviously, you have that investment focus. You have been a member of RAIN for the last 8 years. Is
that's
that right.
Yeah,
so you've
yeah.
been a member. So RAIN is the Real Estate Investment Network,
mm-hmm.
and it really is a data kind of driven kind of what do they call them? Like just
investment group.
Yeah, yeah, investment group and
network.
Yeah, network that basically talks about investment probably. So what are some investment strategies that you share with some of your clients? Because I know you're really, even in your messaging in Facebook and some, and also in your marketing, it's very data driven,
mm-hmm.
right? It's like you offer a value proposition to prospective buyers, and you say, okay, this is your return. This is a lot,
right.
You break it down for
yeah.
people like right there.
Yeah. That's me giving examples of the properties that either I recommend or have or bought with or for other investors. But essentially, when I'm approached by an investor client, someone who's looking to buy an
right.
investment property, it's very much about reverse engineering the property based on their investment goals. Right? People often approach, hey, I want to invest in real estate. Great, but what is your true goal? And that comes from, or that is sort of decided on a few things. First, how much do they have to invest? How much time do they want to get the return? Do they need, is cash flow important, or is it more of an appreciation play?
Mm-hmm.
Are they looking to self-manage? Is it something that they want to get their hands dirty with and do like a fix and flip? There's
right.
all sorts of variables involved. And, I've helped clients everywhere from, I've got two daughters and I want this to pay for their university in 13 years.
Wow.
That's one client, right? Very simple. That's a nice long-term buy and hold in a good area. He's like, I make a ton of money. I don't need cash flow. Just give me a nice big check in 13, 14 years.
Mm-hmm.
Pay for my daughter's education. Great. We've got them set up. Daughter's education is going to be taken care of.
Wow.
That feels great.
That's amazing.
Whereas there's other clients that are like, okay, well, I'm cash rich, but I can't qualify for a mortgage. Maybe I've got too many. Maybe I'm new to Canada.
Right.
Awesome. There's things like REITs and MIX and other investment platforms to get that type of investor into. There's someone who's like, I've got 5 years and I've got 100 grand and I need big cash flow. Where can I go? Well, that's going to be a bit more high risk. Maybe we look up in Northeast BC in a Dawson
mm-hmm.
Creek or something like that. We can get them, $800 a month cash flow in a higher risk area, but he doesn't need appreciation per se. So again, it's about reverse engineering based on specific goals for each investor.
That is very wise. I hope you guys were listening to that, because that he just dropped some dimes there. So, obviously really specific advice for the client's needs based on really listening and asking the right questions about their future goals, reverse engineering that into the exact type of product that's going to be necessary for them to accomplish those goals, and then being really analytical on behalf of these people that may or may not have be veterans of real estate purchases, and really being their advocate and doing the analysis properly so that they feel confident to pull the trigger. So sounds like it's a pretty logical decision that you bring people through to buy these properties. It's not just like, everyone else wants it, let's jump in too.
Yeah. Well, investors are in it because of, the financial gain, but they approach it completely different than someone who's buying a home.
Yeah,
right?
Totally.
Really, the emotion is largely stripped entirely away. And so it's the data that's going to
yeah.
be the deciding factor.
So what percentage of your business would be investor focused, and how much would be like kind of, I'm buying it for myself to live in?
For sure. Yeah. This year I'm 30% investor.
Okay. So that's a pretty good mix.
Properties this year.
Yeah. So, especially when you talk about, the market, a lot of investors are really weary to jump into the market right now because of, some uncertainties and stuff like that.
Which market, Michael?
Yeah. There's only, yeah. So we can kind of shift a little bit. So,
the only reason I asked what market, again, it's the data and the numbers that matter. And that's why, groups like Rain are so beneficial, because sure, the Vancouver market, quote unquote, might be less exciting or less approachable right now for an investor, but that's why it's great to have knowledge for, let's call it, all of Western Canada. Because, I'm very happy to recently get clients into places like Nanaimo, which has very exciting economics.
Right.
Langford on the island.
Yeah.
Again, your Prince George's.
Yeah.
Abbotsford is producing great numbers right now.
The return on investment on rental income is considerably higher than it is here.
That's it. So again, investing, we don't look at it necessarily geographically as much as we do, again, which area is going to fundamentally get
mm-hmm.
you the returns that you want.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. What are some of the vacancy rates on those places? Maybe Dan will sell me a place today.
Nanaimo is on the higher end at 3%.
Okay.
But again,
that's 3%. But what do you bank for a contingency on that, Dan? Like if you're doing your kind of a pro forma or an investment analysis?
Oh, I always put in 2 months. is you serve your minimal in the bank, right? 2 months of vacancy.
Yeah.
But again, 3% is less than 2 months.
Yeah, it is.
But you know, I always play on the conservative side when it comes to investments.
My man Dan, conservative. good.
Yeah.
So there's some interesting, you know, Dan and I have, I feel so fortunate to work with Dan at Oquin and to be able to, you know, to see him develop and see him grow as an entrepreneur, as like a huge contributor to our office. I think he's acts as somewhat of a, like, I would say a role model to a lot of our new agents getting started. Especially Dan is what we call a transitionary realtor. So he didn't start his career as an agent. He transitioned from another, you know, former 20-year career in music. And he did so successfully, which is fantastic to see. But it's been a, like, just an honor to see and just be kind of a witness to the to his business. And it's continuing to grow and it is adapting right now. We're not adapting, it's evolving. So why don't you share, can you share a little bit about how it's evolving with the partner? Yeah.
Yeah, of course. And thanks for asking.
Yeah.
Again, initially when I started, and again, fully ego-based, my vision was to become a successful solo agent and then build a team. Right.
Right.
Kind of the Gary Keller again, millionaire real estate agent model.
Mm-hmm.
But a colleague of mine named Ryan Dash joined Oquin within about 3 months of myself.
Yeah.
He's also a new agent. So we were going through the Oquin University together.
Right.
We joined a mastermind group together of new agents. And, you know, throughout the next 6 to 12 months, they're kind of organically recognized that we really, well, work well together.
Yeah.
You know, we have similar mindsets, we have similar work ethics and similar goals in life.
Yeah.
And so we just organically kind of grew closer and closer together, created a great friendship, and then decided, look, this is far more exciting to do as a team.
Right.
You know, so we wanted to partner up, which now makes so much more sense. So we verbally, I guess, decided to do this honestly almost a year ago.
Yeah.
But, you know, we're both very methodical people.
Right.
So we're like, okay, well, let's build a business now on paper, mm-hmm. and let's start doing deals together and make
mm-hmm.
sure that we actually truly like the way we both work.
Yeah.
So, you know, and do we support each other?
Date before you get married.
100%. That's exactly
right.
It. And so, yeah, after, you know, doing a number of deals together and getting really incredible results and, of course, enjoying the process so much more than doing it solo, we are extremely close to pulling the trigger on launching our new company.
Mm.
We've got a new name and everything. And
right.
We are going to do a partnership. We've literally just written the contract, or borrowed the contract from Michael for our
right.
assistant. So we are growing.
Okay.
We are now three. And then, you know, that's going to launch in March.
Mm-hmm.
Next year, you heard it here first.
Right.
You'll hear the official announcement, and you know me with my marketing. You know, you're going to hear about it. So that's going to be the next sort of big phase. You know, we are now a partnership, and we have an assistant, and we are going to be growing a team.
That is very exciting, and I can think of a better business partner for you than Ryan. You know, Ryan, he hasn't been on the pod yet, but he has so much great personality. He is very, very driven, very hardworking, very direct, and he's awesome. We should have him on the pod one of these days soon. But yeah, I think that's fantastic. And growing a team is something that is a really great evolution. I actually think that the real estate business is going in this direction. Don't you think so, Dan?
I completely agree, Michael. Like 100%. I think the way of the solo agent is going to go the way of the dinosaur. You know, for a few reasons, and namely, it's how much support and service you can give your client.
Yeah, exactly.
The team-based model, you know, your client is always going to get a better, I think, result,
mm-hmm.
and just better service overall.
I agree with you in many, many cases. I think it depends on the volume of transactions that you're doing. You know, if you're doing 34. 35, 40, 50 transactions, you're doing it as a solo agent, it is very, very difficult to juggle all the balls are in the air that is going on at the same time and to manage. So it depends on the size of the business.
Mm-hmm.
So especially once you scale your business to a certain size, it almost is necessary for you to avoid plateauing to be able to take on a partner or start with a staff and so on and so forth. And you know, doing this kind of partnership with Ryan's going to be really fun and exciting. Can't wait to work with you guys on it for sure.
Nice.
Do you guys have any shared goals for yourselves that you want to accomplish next year?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, we want to help make our assistant have a fantastic career.
Right.
You know, we want to grow him to have his business within ours and get him very excited.
Yeah.
And, you know, within our systems and models that we've built, we're really excited to take on agents, new or veteran, or everyone in between, and help them succeed.
Hmm.
Because we see huge value in that, and we just love, you know, sharing what we have.
You know,
we've got the system, and it's like this engine, and we can throttle it up as much as we want at any time, and that's something that we want to take other agents that are, you know, ready to, in essence, build their business quicker,
mm-hmm.
and provide them the systems to get them there.
Ooh, this is exciting. I think you're on to something really special here, Dan, and you know, I want to share, like, so I don't know, we should probably do this off pod, but I have my unlicensed assistant manual and I have my buyer's agent manual and stuff like that. I'll share it with you guys so that you guys kind of understand roles and responsibilities, because I think it's very important, especially when you have a team, that you set expectations correctly.
Mm.
And team, partner, girlfriend, anything, you know, you have to set your expectations out from the start.
Yeah.
And then you have to have shared objectives that is not kind of being dictated like from kind of the mountaintop to you, but actually like shoulder to shoulder, this is our shared objective,
mm-hmm.
of what we envision for our relationship moving ahead and beyond. And so that people are, I think that's when people become internally motivated, when, you know, there's a shared objective. And it's funny. I feel even, you know, working at Oakland, working with the agents, working with the staff, working with my own team and stuff like that, I feel like I serve them more than me kind of dictating like, okay, we're going to do this stuff, blah, 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 you know. And it's more like, hey, this was our shared objective. This is why we're doing it. It's really important that we accomplish these things. So what are the metrics so that we know we're moving ahead? And so these are things to kind of consider. So yeah, Dan, I'm going to send you that stuff for sure.
Another reason to love Oakland.
Yeah.
Just giving. It's unbelievable.
Well, we want to, because it's like, you know, I have this saying that I learned from somewhere, I can't remember exactly, but like my ceiling is your floor.
Mm.
So everything I know, everything I've learned in the last 14 years of being in a licensed agent, I want that for you to be where you get started.
Oh, amazing.
Thank you. That's where your feet are. And then when you improve and then you do these amazing things, then you teach me what you learned and then I get to grow as well, you know? So
yeah,
it's a pretty, you know, it's just exciting to see that you're continuing to innovate and evolve your business. And I could talk to you about this forever, but there's one thing that I wanted to, we're at an hour, if you can believe it.
Wow.
It's very fast. So there's one thing I wanted to talk to you. If you could walk us through, because we're getting towards the end of the year,
mm-hmm.
and Dan is a planner, you know, he's a big planner. So if you were to do like run us through a dry, kind of like a verbal dry run of your business planning thought process or process that you do for the end of the year,
mm-hmm.
what would that look like and what is it?
Interesting timing on the question.
Yeah.
I literally have a seminar / webinar tomorrow morning at 10 a.m.
Oh, wow.
About 2020 business planning.
Okay.
And yeah, I mean, again, it's not overly complex.
Okay, good.
To be honest.
Simple.
You know?
Simple.
Yeah.
Great.
I, being a data guy, I definitely track all of my numbers. And when
okay.
I say all my numbers, I can tell you exactly how many people I have called this year. I can tell you how many I've gotten face-to-face with,
mm-hmm.
and how many of those I have converted.
Mm.
Do you know what I'm saying? It's just really a simple algorithm. You know, this many calls equals this many face-to-face meetings equals this many listings or buyers taken equals this many transactions. And
mm-hmm.
you know your percentages along each step of the way.
Mm-hmm.
And so let's say next year my number is, just transactionally speaking, let's call it 50 deals. Right. And again, you just work backwards from that. So 50 deals means I will have to work with, let's call it 60 buyers and sellers.
Mm-hmm.
Right. Let's call it an 85% transaction percentage of successful transactions.
Right.
Right. Okay. Cool. So then, how many of those 65, or how many face-to-face meetings do I have to get to 65? Right.
Right.
And again, you just work backwards. Maybe that number is 80. How many calls do I have to make to get face-to-face with 80?
Yeah.
And
so
then
so you
kind of have
down.
Your overarching number.
Right.
And again, like I said, right now, I know my goal is to communicate with 10 people per day. And that is equal. I've actually beaten my goal for the first time ever in real estate.
Okay.
I've beaten my goals, and that's great. So next year, I just reverse engineer again. Maybe that number will go up to 15 a day.
Right.
And it's almost that simple. Mm-hmm. You know, we tweak along the way and we progress and we learn, you know, new revenue channels and everything else. But that is the overarching simplicity of my 2020 business plan, is how many people you talk to per day.
You know, I think on that note, this has been an incredibly enlightening conversation that we've had with Dan. And I hope, you know, if I was a new agent or, you know, if even now I'm going to go back and take notes on some of the things that that Dan was saying in his journey through real estate. So, Dan, we want to thank you so much for being a part of the pod. Oh, and another note for those of you that enjoyed the podcast. Dan is going to have his own podcast, right? Coming
up
with Brian. So I don't know what they're going to call it. Have you guys come up with it?
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah. What's it called?
I'm not unveiling
it. Okay, you're not unveiling it here. Okay, but that's okay. Hopefully, it's a bit more creative than the Michael U podcast that I came up with when someone asked me, Michael, can you do a podcast? I'm like, sure. What should we call it? Michael, you podcast.
It's branding. It's memorable.
Yeah. And so, you know, I'm really excited to, and I will, whenever you need a guest, I'm happy to go on. I don't know if that's the format that you guys are going to choose, but that's okay. So on that note, Dan, thank you so much for being on the pod.
Thank you so much for having me.
Great. So if you guys have liked this podcast, feel free to like, rate, and subscribe it. I am very needy, and I need to get compliments. Without them, I shrivel up. So please do so when you get it. And until next time, thanks so much, Dan, for being a part of the pod.
Thank you.